Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are talking to Scott Stratton of Unmarketing.com. He's going to talk about his new book and what social networks need to stop doing. All that and a lot more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 176, recorded Thursday, August 21st, 2014. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, where it's very sunny and nice today. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I am back in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I guess I was off the show last week. I was in New York. I'm back in my home studio, and I'm trying to mix things up for our video viewers. I have my little iPad screen here. I'm messing with the lighting, Sarah. I just keep tweaking things here.
Yeah. So, wait, this is your regular studio that we know and love, but it looks completely different once again.
I'm just trying to take it up a notch. So I like to tweak things and see, you know, how to get that much better. You know, I feel this pressure always, Sarah, from the YouTube generation and everything I'm seeing on YouTube. Like, we always have to step it up. Would you agree, kind of?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's a part-time job, really. Yeah. Making sure that the home studio is locked and loaded. Amber, your home studio is much nicer than mine. Anybody who's seen my little setup at home knows that. I have a lot to learn from lighting people, but you have an in-house lighting team, so that's I mean, it's unfair, really.
I have expert help. I do use that to my advantage, but you know, there's always room for improvement. That's the good news, and a lot for everybody to learn. But anyway, we should talk about our guest today, because I'm super excited to have Scott Stratton on the show.
He's back on the show. Gosh, it's been a couple years now, but he's back, and he's more bearded than ever. Hey, Scott.
I just came from a haircut strictly for you guys.
So really?
I had to change the look. I solely grew this out, both the beard and the hair, to look different from the last time I was on the show.
Which is much appreciated. We obviously don't want, you know, your time with us to seem stale in any way. But it's actually really good timing, because not only are you just sort of a fun person to follow on the social nets in general, but you also have a new book.
Unselling, yeah. We got a month till it comes out. It's the book, one of the only business books that has a blank front cover. And if you know anything about publishing, you know how hard we had to fight the publisher to put no author name and no logo. And we love the idea of nothing being on it. And, well, that's what we got.
Okay, so for anybody who's not familiar with that experience, why is it so difficult to say, all right, this is the point I'm trying to make. I want something that's blank. And, you know, you just... How much back and forth do you have to fight with a publisher to get what you want in that regard?
Well, the publisher's already ready to deal with us. The last book was QR Codes Kill Kittens. You know, it was a business book with a kitten on the cover. So we've already fought in the past. And we did a flip book the book before. One, you know, good and bad on each side of the book. So they were ready for something, but they weren't ready for the nothing. And that's what really threw them. And here's the fight, though. The fight was no publisher logo. And the fight was internally in our brains. So our name wouldn't be on the cover, because as us authors, as Amber would back up, we love seeing ourselves. We love seeing our names. And that's the only reason you write a book, because I got my name on the cover so we can make my friends from high school that had no faith in me jealous. And so we removed it all. Which to me is the bane of my existence. But secondly, and the biggest problem, which has been more recently, is trying to capitalize on those trending topics, trying to capitalize on those hashtags. We see something happening, like the Robin Williams example just happened, of brands not just using the hashtags anymore, but then making pictures or Instagrams and tagging them, saying, you know, we feel bad for him. And then they're tagging their own industry in it as well, so they pick up on all the trending topics. And tragedy is never a good time to leverage anything. And we're still doing that. And that's why we'll always have content. I'll always have something to talk about, because science says that 80% of humans are morons, and most of those run brand Twitter accounts.
Wow. I've read a lot of science books, but I've never heard it exactly like that.
80%, Amber.
I'm learning something new every day. Now, on the positive side of social media, there's something happening right now that we should talk about, because probably the biggest story across all social platforms, which is the Ice Bucket Challenge to raise money for ALS. And this is a really big deal. A lot of people are contributing to this charity and a lot of ice bucket videos, but still a bit of backlash from people. I just wanted to get your opinion on what's happening right now, Scott, with all of this.
Well, first, part of that little bit of backlash started, I was one of them, because I originally thought the challenge was either donate $100 or do the Ice Bucket Challenge video. And they all started going viral. I'm like, wait a second, these videos are going viral for you saying, hey, I'm not donating anything, and dumping ice in your head. And then I realized, you know, it was $10 if you did the video or $100 if you didn't. And then I turned into loving it. And any of the backlash you see is now making me upset. It's almost one of the most... It is the most successful nonprofit thing I've ever seen. I started in nonprofit. I ran one of the first tweet-a-thons ever in social media, and I understand the challenge of nonprofit and charity raising money. The cool thing, there's a couple cool things about this to me on every level. One, ALS didn't come up with it. It had nothing to do with them. It was a couple of friends getting together, and one of the guys nominated ALS as his charity, and then it took off. And number two, that means they have no fundraising overhead. 47% of a fundraising of a charity's dollar goes into making those funds. It's a cost, it's expense, and their cost is zero, minus, you know, some small credit card processing fees. They have zero marketing spend. They don't have to keep the viral going. And that, to me, it's awesome. It is 100% awesome. There's not 99% here. There should be no negativity. People talk about, well, there's a drought in California. I've seen it twice in the past 2 days. There's a drought going on in California. How dare you dump a bucket of water on your head and help people who are dying from a disease? There is a drought. Same person who's now watering their lawn, you know, is complaining about a dumping a bucket. It is the perfect storm of awesome in a time right now in this world that we need awesome. It is a terrible negative time, and rightfully so. There's a lot of bad things happening, both, you know, close to home and, you know, overseas, that seeing this is the one thing that's gone viral the most. It makes me smile. You know, that makes me happy. And we just donated yesterday ourselves $100 for it. And I think that I've never seen the number of celebrities get involved. I saw David Beckham's yesterday, and he challenges, hey, my buddy DiCaprio's got to do this now and stuff. I've never seen something catch on so much so fast and do something for something that's such a great cause.
Scott, yeah. I sometimes feel like anything that is viral or popular enough that it kind of becomes something that everybody's aware of, there's always this backlash now. Do you think that the way that these ideas spread on social media so quickly has something to do with this, like, insta-fatigue that a lot of people get? I mean, as you said, there's really nothing to hate about this. If you don't want to participate, then whatever. You donate or eat. But it's like...
There's nothing.
It's hard to get fired up about why it bothers you. Why is it, though, that everything tends to have a backlash now?
But it's like this. It's like the stages of viral, right? There's excitement, there's denial, there's anger, like everything. People get angry at cat pictures. I'm going to say that again. People will get angry at cat pictures.
Don't tell
for
Sarah
crying
that.
Out loud,
oh, no,
right?
Scott.
Horrible people.
I don't understand that when people, there's always, I realize this. There's always going to be a percentage of people that you read a YouTube comment section any day you want. There's always going to be people that will take exception and problems to anything, mostly because they're, you know, keyboard commandos and they can. I saw a guy on my Facebook this morning who was so angry that he got tagged in this, in the challenge. He's like, I will not take the pressure in doing this. I donate to other charities and I refused to get this like charity extortion type of thing. I'm like, you need to simmer down. I'm going to start a charity for you, right? Just so you can relax. Like, people need to understand that everybody's, no matter what, you realize, and that's why we came up with that phrase a couple years ago with the stickers and the posters saying, ignore the haters, you're not the jackass whisperer. Like, that's the whole point of it. You're never going to please everybody. You're never going to, you just can't. This is a wonderful thing. And the only people who have rightfully should be angry is every single charity and fundraiser now who love it and hate it because it's not for their charity. And then the copycats that will come out next. I don't think this changes charity and social media because ALS didn't come up with it. I think it's going to, nobody remembers this, the first copycat or the second, you know, somebody else comes out next week and says, let's dump it by buckets of fire for us or something. Nobody's going to remember it. This was the big one. This happens once in a lifetime, and it's a pleasure to be able to watch it happen as it does.
I think the interesting thing about it, too, is that we've always talked about the power of the internet to influence and to do good in the world. And there are a few times where we actually see that. And I think you're exactly right. You definitely see it here. And to go back to that idea of internet haters, it reminds me, I posted an article, I think it was yesterday, about a food bank in Ottawa that had said they no longer want Kraft Dinner. So they don't want Kraft Dinner because it's not real food. They want healthier food to give to people in need. And someone wrote me back on Twitter and said, that's ridiculous. Beggars can't be choosers. I mean, people are, I mean, it's unbelievable how vocal people can get and how insensitive they can be oftentimes across every social platform, pretty much.
It hurts my soul. And you realize that the internet hasn't created, you know, more trolls or more angry people. It's just created the more, you know, leverage and more platform for them. There's always been people who are like that. There's always been haters, but now we have the ability to be virtual and hide behind a keyboard. And you can't let them stop you. And that's the problem. It's so easy to get caught up in it. Like a trivial issue, like this beard, for crying out loud. I have people on Facebook, you need to cut your beard, you need to trim this. I'm like, who exactly are you again? And why are you saying this to me? Like, I had a picture go viral on Reddit last week, got 3 million views. It's me holding a sign saying ban Candy Crush invites. And I don't know if you've ever had something go viral on Reddit and check the comment section, but I got some fashion tips, let's say the least. Yeah. So you need to realize that, you know, you take the opinion of people you love, you trust, and you cherish, and their opinions matter. And at the end of the day, you feel good about yourself. So, you know, go be your good self and, you know, ignore the haters and the trolls.
Amber, should we talk about how things are changing on Twitter? Because obviously you and me and Scott all pretty much live on that social network.
Yeah, I think we definitely should. And, you know, funny enough, the article that we have in our show notes is from TechCrunch. And the URL actually says /crap, because they call what's happening on Twitter right now, as far as what you're seeing in your stream, they say it's total crap. And they even have a picture of
What looks like crap. Yeah. unidentified crap. Right.
So I'm going to say that TechCrunch doesn't like this.
Yeah, and the whole idea is in injecting tweets from people. And Amber, you and I have talked about the idea of this. Injecting, or it's possible that I talked about it with Tanya last week when you were not on the show. But the idea of Twitter wanting to surface content from people that you might not already follow, that could be more helpful than just suggesting a handful of account names that don't have a lot of context. Then again, as TechCrunch puts it, it's polluting the Twitter experience, at least the native experience that we're all used to. Scott, what are your thoughts on this? Is this just kind of natural progression because Twitter has to keep growing?
Stop it, please. Stop saying you need to be more relevant. It is the last frontier of social media where I see things in real time and I decide what I want to see and what I want to read. If I log into Facebook one more time and I see an update from 92 hours ago, but it, you know, they feel it's relevant, it's going to kill me. And the problem with this is I have no problem with Twitter suggesting tweets like they're suggesting users. Do it in a sidebar, do it in a different tab. But the whole point of Twitter was for me to pick who I follow, and therefore, if the tweets are irrelevant, that's my fault, and I can unfollow them. I don't want suggested tweets. It's the last real-time kind of social thing we've got, and I don't want to lose that. I don't want you're watching a TV show, you're watching a live event. It's great. It's real-time. I don't need you. I don't need to follow any more people, by the way. I need to follow less, right? I want to make my timeline more relevant, not more cluttered. And they're doing this because when we have to change, we have to refresh. I don't have a problem with it the way it is now. I just wanted to I want Facebook to stop changing our feeds to negative to test us out. I want OkCupid to stop messing with people's dating life, and I want Twitter to stop messing with ours. You're getting too far, right? It's amazing when science fiction authors look at this and go, "Wow, that's really creepy. We know we have a problem." Right? We're coming to this point where we're doctoring with people's heads and minds, and then doing it without telling people. That's the worst part. Just saying, oh, by the way, yeah, we messed with you last week. Sorry. Sorry about that. That's trust. You're eroding trust. I'm at the final straw with Facebook with trust. I'm already out of Foursquare. And I'm also, sadly enough, ready just to boot Twitter. I can't deal with these type of things anymore. They're eroding trust. Like, trust doesn't matter anymore. And they're messing with our emotions.
Yeah, I mean, what I can't understand is why any of them think this is a good idea. I mean, there is no scenario where I want to log into Facebook. And like you, I'll see stories that are 48 hours old or 72 hours old, and they're not relevant anymore. And I can't imagine any user actually liking this. And to me, that's when all these social networks tend to go sideways, is when they do forget about that user base and about satisfying those users and understanding what they want. And right now, it just feels like people are kind of copying this idea that they should kind of populate our news feeds with what they think we want. And it never goes over well.
Well, it used to be individuals, right? Facebook was Facebook, Twitter was Twitter. But now we all try to be like each other and have the same kind of things that we got messengers here. Now Pinterest has direct messaging and instant messaging. If you're all going to try to be the same, then what's the point? Why am I jumping to four or five or six different places?
You know, it's interesting when you think about all the people who are working for these companies, right? These are all examples of companies that started very small, very startup, and now have hundreds and sometimes thousands of employees. Twitter and Facebook are good examples. The people who work there they're users too. I wonder why it gets so difficult to, like, stay on course when it comes to social networks. Why do they all have to evolve to kind of all be the same thing? Are we just in some sort of a social networking era where nobody has the right formula figured out just yet? And so it's a lot of copying and that sort of thing. I'm just not really sure. You know, why do we continue to have these conversations like, oh, the people at Twitter are screwing with it again? I mean, nobody who works at Twitter wants us to say that. So why does it keep happening?
I think as soon as you stop listening to users and start listening to investors, that's when it changes.
But investors are users too.
No, but there's a difference between saying, look, if we just make this friendly and change this to the point where now we can insert anything into people's timelines, then we can maybe monetize that even better. If we can all get people to play the same game and the role so we can push the things we want all the time, then we can make more money. And that's the problem where the flip is. It's the same as Facebook. Facebook used to let us switch on the apps and on the thing. Instead of relevant, it's most recent. And now they're like, y'all want relevant. We just took off the option for most of the apps that use it now. You know what? You all want a separate messenger app because, hey, we say you should because we want to be like Snapchat or we want to be like anything. We want to control that. And I really think that you also get a bigger head. When you're sitting back there and say, we run Facebook and it has, you know, a billion people, you know, we're pretty awesome. And then I think you do. The more distance you get. That's why when you start up and your user base is everything, right? And the word of mouth of your user base is everything. I don't think Facebook could give a rat's ass about getting word of mouth about Facebook anymore. They have no need for that anymore. As now it's going to be organically grown if it still grows, and they want to now harness those users even harder and harder into their own kind of paradigms that they want people in. Versus, you know, when you're brand new, you need your friend to say, you've got to go use Snapchat. You got to check this out. It's awesome. It's a shift. There is a shift between those two things. That's when you see it fall.
So what does Scott Stratton do? You know, you decide that you're done with Facebook. You're done potentially. I'm not saying you're going to leave Twitter, but let's say it happens. Are there any social networks out there that you're enjoying today or other technology platforms? Where are you going, Scott? Because we're going to follow you.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna read a book. Maybe and go talk to people and like face to face stuff.
No, come on.
It's
not going to happen.
I actually really do want to, you know, I do want to see what's next. And I just don't know where that is. And you know, obviously you get this whole kind of the private social side of things, which is kind of almost, you know, it contradicts itself. But, you know, people, especially the younger generation, we want to message everybody, but we don't want anybody else to see it no matter what. And I don't really go anywhere else now at the point. I like to see the behind the scenes. I like to see why things go are viewed relevant on Facebook and after the big changes and people got to pay and I never pay and I'm still getting a lot of reach. So I'm still exploring that. I don't think I can ever leave any of them because people expect me to be on them. That's the thing. I was going to leave LinkedIn last month because they changed the notifications to every person I'm connected with, which is like 5,000 people. I'm going to get a notification every time they post a LinkedIn blog post. I log in every day to 87 to 95 notifications. So I never see the notifications meant for me, like somebody's commented on my update or somebody's, you know, endorsed me for something. They've now made it less relevant, but I can't leave because somebody wants to hire me to do a keynote somewhere, which is how I make money. They look me up on LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook. And if I'm not there, I'm not part of that relevancy anymore.
I should mention, we just had a tweet come in from at Mac Molly, who says, social media really made sense after hearing Scott speak, build relationships and let it happen. So obviously a really good point from him. I mean, it is all about relationship building. We've been talking about that from day one.
It's still there. And that's the thing. There's a lot of noise, but it's self-created. We make the noise because we choose who to follow. We choose who to friend. We choose who to add to contact. It's still there. Like, we can sit back, and all three of us can sit back on our front porch and talk about the old days of Twitter. And those were wonderful old days on Twitter. You know, everybody who was there was, they want, you can go on Twitter and say, what's up? And then people jump in and say, hey, how you doing? Right? It was like,
they still do that. There's a lot of that going on now.
But it's, if I go tweet right now and I say, what's up, everybody, I'll get 7 replies.
Yeah.
I did it 2 years ago, I'd get 4,300.
Yeah.
Like, it's so different. And as for somebody who has a lot of fake popularity, I can't imagine if you joined Twitter today to try to climb up that mountain and get through all the noise. I don't know if I could do what I did in like 2008, 2009 and built a large following in the way it is now. So it's still there. There's still some awesome people, but a lot of them have also, you know, moved on or left. And that's sad, because I still believe in social. I still believe in social media. I just think these platforms keep doing things to kind of remove some of the social, and some of the noise jumps in too much.
You're also doing podcasting now. So you have a relatively new podcast, but that's also a different format. How are you enjoying that?
We love the Unpodcast. We do the Unpodcast and the Vegas 30. The Vegas 30 is for people who go to Vegas who are over 30. It's too old to stand in line, but too young to retire to the bingo hall. And because it's a different world there when you're 21 versus 38 or something. So I have never, Allison and I do it. So, and she co-authored Unselling and all the other books, by the way. But this is the first time her name is on the new book. And we do it, and I'm telling you, for being 9 years late to the podcast party, we've never had more fun in anything in business. We've done 39 episodes now. And it's pretty much like the subheading of it is like the customer strikes back. Like, we just get to rant off on all these things. And I'm not one for, as you know, Amber, I'm not one for doing like consistent anything. I don't like to do work. So I don't do a weekly blog post. I don't do 5 tweets a day or 4 Facebook blog posts at all. We do this weekly, and we've stuck to it because it's so much fun, which is a tip for people creating content. You got to love what you do if you're going to create the content. And we can't wait to get it. We go to the studio west of Toronto. We record 3 or 4 episodes at a time and then release them every week. And man, I'm telling you, it's a hoot. It's a great time.
It's a great show.
As somebody who also works in podcasting, I can agree. It's a great time. Yeah. It doesn't feel like work to talk about social media with the two of you at all.
It's a ton of fun. So we should probably wrap things up, since we told you we would let you go. We're a little bit delayed in that. But where can people find you, and what do you want to tell people if they want to follow more about what Scott Stratton is doing? The bearded version of Scott Stratton, I should say.
go find the Hidden Bearded Marketers group on Facebook. That's one of them. But Unmarketing is everything. Unmarketing.com, Unmarketing Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I don't care. We're on all those. And Unselling comes out September 29th. And awesome. Look for the blank book in your bookstores.
People can find out more information, of course, at unmarketing.com, which is your little life online. Lots of links to, your most recent book and Amazon links and all that good stuff, plus links to Scott's podcast and just a lot more about Scott, who, as you've seen, if you didn't catch Scott the last time he was on the show, which I think really was about a couple of years ago, clearly the man knows his stuff. So follow him on Twitter, as we do.
Thank you all.
Thanks so much for being here, Scott.
We'll see you on Twitter.
All right.
See you on the interwebs. He's not leaving Twitter. Who can leave Twitter?
You can't. That's what he said. I mean, you're kind of handcuffed, right? I mean, you do get to that point where there are days where I feel like leaving certain social networks, but I'm never going to do it because people have that expectation that you're going to be there. And, you know, it's one of those things. You just got to stick with it, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. Leo and I have had this conversation a bunch. And, you know, LinkedIn, as Scott said, he's like, I don't like it, but I have to use it because that's my platform. I think a lot of people feel that way. Leo sort of triumphantly left Facebook a couple of times and then was like, I need it, though. You know, that's where a lot of people are interacting with me or want to. I can't really cut it out of my life, you know, to make a point without feeling like I am actually suffering in a social way. And then, of course, there's the research aspect, which is a little bit unique to some of us. But it's tough. It's tough to you know, in the case of Twitter changing the, you know, what you're going to see in your timeline, you know, I need Twitter. Twitter is like, that is my number one news research
Me
tool.
Too, yeah.
So I kind of just have to grin and bear it. It would have to be really bad for me to be able to not use Twitter and feel like I'm still getting the same amount of information, because I don't know how I would.
But I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, Twitter is, for a lot of people, that's their news source, right? I mean, it's more than just a social network. It's grown into so much more. And if I had to lose, you know, Facebook and some of the other social networks, I'm not saying I'd be okay, but I would be, you know, pretty okay if I lost Twitter. It would be entirely different because of that element of getting breaking news or news in my community and all those different things.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is our lifeblood. All right. Well, before we move on to some of our other newsworthy items of the week, just a reminder, we record the Social Hour on Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Amber and I are sandwiched right in between Know How, which teaches you how to do stuff, and Coding 101, which teaches you how to code, which are both wonderful shows. But Thursday, you know, clearly it's kind of the best day of the week. You've got the Social Hour and a lot of other good stuff, too. But, of course, if you can't watch us live or prefer to watch or listen on demand, you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That's not only where all of our show archives live, but where our subscription links are as well. We make it easy for you to subscribe to the show completely free, of course. And then you can watch or listen in whatever way you so desire. Last week, we had Chuck Hester, speaking of LinkedIn, who is a LinkedIn expert. I mean, he thinks about LinkedIn more than anybody that I know. And it was great. It was a really great conversation. Learned a lot about why he thinks that LinkedIn is extremely important and how to use it to your advantage. And, you know, Amber, he even called me out and said, because I said, you know, it's just kind of a place where my resume lives. And he says, you're doing it wrong. So, It was nice to get a few tips.
Learning experience.
Exactly. And that was last week's show.
We should also say hi to Billy Burl, who just said hello on Twitter and says that it's his first time watching Twit Live with us. He said, great discussion and lots of hair. And I think he's referring to Scott when he says lots of hair.
I mean, you know, we've got hair too. But yes, I think it's... Oh, yes, there you are, Billy. Hi, Billy. Nice to have you. Thanks for watching The Social Hour for the first time live. All right, Amber, I'm clearly punchy. I just got back from vacation last night, and I don't know, Amber, I probably need a couple more hours of sleep. Let's move on to, this is kind of interesting. Speaking of Facebook, Facebook has taken to labeling certain articles as satire. For example, articles from The Onion, which, of course, is certainly a satirical publication, because it's fooling everybody. You know, Facebook is definitely not a great place to hang out too much if you're really gullible. but as, you know, we've all seen, links get shared and it gets out of control and sometimes they're not exactly true. And anybody who's familiar with The Onion knows that there is truth in satire, right? But, those are funny headlines, not necessarily the truth. What do you think, Amber? Do you think we need these sorts of labels?
I think we do. I mean, I think time and time again, people see stuff, whether it's on Facebook or other social networking sites or just on the internet in general. And a lot of the time, they don't know if it's true or if it's false. They're not familiar with The Onion as a satirical news source. And so for Facebook to label some of these articles as satire, I think it's probably a good move. Because I know even when I read through my Facebook feed, I mean, 50% of it is just kind of junk. I mean, there's so many advertisements. It's a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, there's good stuff in there, too. But I think we're living in an age, and I was having this conversation with someone yesterday, of misinformation, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard for people to distinguish sometimes what's true and what's not and what's satire in this particular case.
Yeah, I guess even if it's sort of like, ugh, isn't it obvious? No, the answer is always no, not to everybody. So, sure. I mean, I guess Facebook has clearly been studying how articles of this nature are shared, and internally they must have some algorithm where they're like, this is, you know, they're looking at comments and that sort of stuff and saying these are being shared for the wrong reasons. And we mm-hmm. do know that Facebook is currently in the midst of trying to get links cleaned up, you know, less of the viral, feel good, warm, fuzzy stuff, and more kind of relevant news, again, because they're trying to be Twitter, but that's nothing new. So I guess that this is just a one step further in making sure that everybody's on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much, you know, and I think in that case, it does make some sense. Another interesting story, and this one just kind of came out of left field for me, but this is about Whisper. We've talked about that app before, the anonymous app that allows you to share things and without ever revealing your true identity. It turns out that they have a nonprofit that they've been running for a while, and it's now a digital platform. They've invested about $1 million into this, and this is a place where people can go if they're suffering from depression or they need a place to discuss other issues that they're facing openly. People can go there and have those conversations. The thing I think is neat about this story, Sarah, is that if you think about Whisper as being a place where people are sharing this stuff anyway, is it the responsibility of the technology company to then support them in a more meaningful way? And in this case, it's probably one of the first companies I've seen kind of step up and do something like this.
Yeah, I guess you have to be pretty vocal about the fact that you know, in Whisper's case, you also have a nonprofit arm that has a very specific mission and kind of goes against the core point of your for-profit app, right? The whole point of Whisper is you just, you know, you say stuff anonymously. And so then you get a lot of really interesting things that people are saying because they don't have to admit who they are. Well, okay, when you're talking about suicide prevention, for example, you know, depression, that sort of thing, well, you know, then you get into kind of these are actual issues that apps like Whisper and Secret are criticized for. Because there's bullying, there's, you know, you're not being able to know who somebody is and not being able to seek help or reach out to offer help, that sort of thing. This seems quite lovely. The founders, $1 million endowment for this separate nonprofit entity. It's called Your Voice. And it's interesting because they have some numbers in here where they quote certain percentages of you know, if you have access to a suicide prevention hotline, you're much more likely, you know, to end up talking through with somebody. That's why the hotlines are out there. But, you know, all of these metrics that really point out how important something like Your Voice is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, then to your point, it kind of turns into the question of, well, okay, now what about the people who make the app secret? Because that gets a lot of criticism as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's an interesting move. You know, even in the article that we have posted in our show notes, they talk about the fact that when it comes to social networks that are trying to protect certain groups or help them, they really don't do too much except perhaps remove images. Like, let's say there's someone suffering from anorexia and there's an image of an anorexic woman and it's inappropriate for some reason. You know, maybe you could ask for that to be removed, and that's pretty much it. What's interesting, I think, about what Whisper is doing is just going that step further. And I hope more social networks go this way, where they have that feeling that they want to be more responsible, and there is this feeling of kind of giving back to the community and having an offshoot like this. So looks like a pretty interesting initiative, and I'm surprised it's them who's doing it, but I'm sure they've seen a lot of perhaps the worst of what people are feeling and how they're feeling isolated.
Yeah, and it really does, whether or not you feel like this is the, you know, the social network that you need, there is a real sense of, okay, let's kind of put this issue front and center, you know, and actually have faces with words and that sort of thing, which again is that's not what Whisper is at all. But it's interesting to see that the people who are working behind an app that has generated a lot of buzz, but also criticism for being perhaps a dangerous place, that they're obviously they're doing some good stuff here.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so next up we have our social tip. I don't know how useful this is for the average person, but I saw it on Waxy Links, and anything that Andy Bio puts on that page, I tend to take interest in. It's a simple little tool. It's called GIFYouTube.com, and it allows you to turn a piece of a YouTube video very easily into a GIF if you would choose to do something like that. It's just an easy way to do that, and it's almost just as much fun going to the webpage itself and seeing what they showcase.
GIFYouTube.com. You know, Amber, it's funny. I had a few photos that I thought they were similar photos, and I thought, oh, I'll make a, you know, animate a GIF out of it. And it was harder than I thought it would be. You know, it's like I went to the internet and typed in make a GIF. You know, and then I there's sort of some crap sites that you know that rise to the top of your Google results, and they are all not really what I wanted to do. And it was one of these things where I had to laugh. Like, how many times do I watch animated GIFs? You know, on a daily basis. You know, that's in the double digits, right? And I still just never made one before. It wasn't that hard. It was just I kind of chuckled at that. It was, there wasn't sort of a very obvious way for me to do it.
Yeah, so they make it super simple. You literally go to YouTube, you take we have a little demo here. You take a YouTube link, you plug it into this tool, you select a portion of the video that you want to turn into an animated GIF, and it's as easy as that. You create the GIF, and just an easy tool that someone has put out there, and of course, I'm sure people will have lots of fun with it.
I love it. Oh, look, there's Jason in the Ice Bucket Challenge. It's good stuff. I love that. Cool. Let's see the GIF. So hey, that's my set.
There we go.
See what happens when I go on vacation? Good grief. That actually looked pretty good. Good work, Jason. Good work. Good work.
Nice job. Nice job.
I almost called you out for that.
Yeah. I've been ice bucket challenged already.
Okay.
So you can challenge somebody else. I don't know what to do about that, Amber. I'm just kind of like sitting on it.
I just donated $100. I just went to the site and donated $100. And you know what? My reason for this was that if Scott's right to the point of if you do an ice bucket video, then you are required to donate about $10. If you don't do it, $100 is the number. I kept thinking by the time I actually get to a place where I'm going to get ice and a bucket, pour it on my head, videotape it, put it online, it could be 2 or 3 days. Or I could simply click through with my credit card and donate $100. So it was the easiest track to helping out, I suppose.
I also... I mean, are you really going to be the person who's like, $100 is too much for me, $10 is more my speed, and to make up the difference, I will dump ice on my head? I mean, that's kind of a tough argument.
And also, the ice bucket videos are getting so good. People are so creative.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost at the point that it's easier just to say, you know what, I'm ashamed of what I might be able to do. It might not be good enough. So I'm just going to donate the $100 and watch the rest of the fabulous videos that have been done online.
But then, of course, because it's this social thing, right, that everybody's participated in, is so then if I donate the $100... Well, I definitely want the friend who nominated me to know that I didn't just blow her off. So then it kind of turns into this thing where I have to sort of like almost brag about the fact that I donated. Yeah. It gets weird.
I just did that on Twitter like an hour ago.
Well,
I just mentioned I'm still dry, donated.
Right, yeah. Well, I promise I won't nominate you, Amber, because I know that you've done the right thing already.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, let's move on to our app of the week. It's Cuddle with a K.
This is a cute one, and it's for kids. We don't really talk about kids apps all that much on the show. This is one that TechCrunch is calling Instagram with training wheels, which I think is a great way to describe it. I've noticed this more and more with kids, especially kids that are, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, 9 years old. They love to take their parents' smartphones and take photos all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what they can do with this app now is they can do that in a safe environment, and they can share those photos with people that their parents have said, hey, it's okay to share them with these individuals. And there's even a character that the Cuddle app has created, so that's always the first, the user's first friend, kind of like in the MySpace days, Sarah, with Tom, when Tom was your only friend.
Right, Tom was everybody's friend.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you read about Cuddle. What kind of fascinated me is when I went into the user guidelines, they talk about things they don't let you do because they want to really avoid an environment where people are feeling pressured or bullied. So you can't leave comments, you can't write on the photos. So it's very protected. So I just think it was kind of a cute and interesting idea.
Yeah, this is great. It's you're absolutely right. One of my friend's daughters she's not even a year old, and all she wants is the iPhone.
Yeah.
And, you know, if she can figure out how to take a photo, I mean, it's just pretty much the best thing. But, yeah, I mean, you can't just let, the younger kids go wild, with hashtags on Instagram. And, the social networks in general are not necessarily super kid friendly. This is cute. It actually reminds me of a lot of apps that sort of do the take a photo, but then there's a little bit more artwork, multimedia, let's layer things. You can, you know, have little slogans, that kind of thing, but just a little bit more geared towards younger folk.
Yeah. And you know what, Sarah? I mean, a lot of parents think, oh, I'm going to keep my kids away from this stuff entirely. It's virtually impossible. I mean, your best bet is to get educated about some of these different tools and technologies and figure out a safe way for them to interact. But you can't avoid it, right? And I see a lot of parents who are like, oh, I'm not going to let my kid do this till they're 12 or 13. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, these kids have grown up where, you know, probably the first thing they saw was their mom or dad standing over them with the iPhone and pointing it at them. Right,
right. Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. I also think it's interesting that Cuddle doesn't have comments, which yeah. is that, you know, that's a smart move on their part, right? Because yeah. you can't control what weirdos say to your children or young people in general that you know. But you know, if you strip out something like that, then obviously you greatly reduce any sort of troll-like comment.
Yeah. So it's like the way they set it up is that it's only positive interactions and creative photos, right? So it's just it's a nice little idea. Plus, the name is adorable. Let's face it.
Cuddle with a K. Gotta love it. Like a Kardashian. All right.
Sarah, you just ruined it.
I'm surprised. Sarah. That's all I can think of now with the letter K. I don't know. That says a lot more about me than anything
else. I feel
like
they need to have like a Sesame Street like viral video that's like how the Kardashians ruined the letter K.
Do you know how popular that Kardashian app is?
I know.
I'm going down a little bit of rat hole, but I don't know what to do with that information. Amber, what's this world coming to?
I have absolutely no comment, Sarah, about
okay.
that.
All right. Well, instead of talking about K names, let's talk about our social marketing spotlight of the week. And this is one of my favorite services, Hotel Tonight.
Yeah, I just used Hotel Tonight last week when I was in Cambridge, and a great tool, and they are starting to advertise on Instagram. Now, they're not the first brand, but they're one of the first smaller brands to advertise within the Instagram app. And one of the things I thought was cool about this, Sarah, is that what they've done is they've created a photo series. They hired a great photographer who came in, and the campaign's called Tonight I Am, and it's photos of you know, individuals who are pretending they're somewhere else, but really they're in, you know, kind of stuck in their regular jobs. But obviously the idea being that Hotel Tonight, the service that lets you get great deals on luxury and nice hotels, would transport them to a happier place versus their day jobs. It's just a cute, creative campaign. And I like that they're not, like the article says, they could just take pictures of all their hotels and put them on Instagram and push them into your feed, but they're not doing that.
Well, it's people-based, which obviously on Instagram, that works really well.
Yep.
And as you said, the photos are really nice. I mean, they're kind of kitschy, but I mean, these are obviously talented photographers.
Well done, yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of cool. I have to say, in general, I find Instagram ads are like the least annoying ads that I come across, because they're still photos.
Exactly.
It's like if there's a McDonald's banner ad, I'm going to be like, oh, God. You know, but if there's some, you know, and I'm using McDonald's as an example just because I don't really like McDonald's. But, you know, if there was some like artsy golden arches and the sun was set, you know, and I could still be like, it's a good picture.
Yeah, I mean, McDonald's did do a campaign with Instagram. There was a lot of backlash, actually. A lot of people upset about it. Not so much because the pictures weren't good or the images weren't good, but people just, I mean, people are very sensitive about McDonald's and the fact that their food isn't necessarily healthy, and a lot of backlash with them. But I'm with you. I think Instagram ads typically have been pretty good, and hopefully they stay that way. I sort of feel the same way, actually, about Vine and some of the brands that have done Vine videos. Usually they're very clever and creative because they're 6 seconds long, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't disrupt you too much.
You know, speaking of Vine, we didn't have this in our lineup, but Vine will now allow you to upload videos that you already have taken, which is really helpful.
Finally.
Yeah, because sometimes it's like, I don't know, I'm really bad with videos. I always think I'm videoing and I'm not. I don't know. It's like just like an old person problem that I have. But I have a collection of videos that, you know, if I thought about it, might be a kind of funny looped Vine, right? But you know, if you don't take it within the app, you were screwed before. So that's actually a nice little feature that Vine has allowed us all to do now. If you've got perfectly great Vine videos that are outside of the app, but somewhere on your phone, whether it's, you know, iPhone or Android, you can now participate.
That is great news.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And Hotel Tonight, by the way, is such a great app. I know, Amber, you said that you just used it. I've used it a couple times. It's really... It's a fantastic app to have. Just if you're in a jam and you know, gosh, you know, I'm going to be in this city for one more night and I don't have a hotel lined up and I really don't want to stay in some flea bag place. It is really just a indispensable app to have on hand just to see what some of your options are. And because it's last minute, some of the deals really are great. I've seen mm-hmm. deals for hotels that I've stayed at before where it's like, man, I paid twice that when I stayed there, yeah. you know, for a nice place.
Yeah, a very handy little app.
Very handy indeed. A reminder that we love hearing from you. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail, 2626-SOCIAL. You can tweet at us. Amber and I will read your tweets on the air, sometimes anyway. Yeah. And of course, you can upload videos somewhere, send us the link, any way that you'd like to contribute to the show, guest suggestions, all of that good stuff. We are happy to hear it, and thanks to everybody who contributes each week. All right, Amber, should we end this show with a little rad or fad?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. I saw this on Mashable earlier on today. It's a wearable device, and we've done a lot in the wearable tech space. This one, I think, is probably the most useful thing that I've seen, and I really want one of these, perhaps because my iPhone is constantly dead and it drives me crazy. So this is basically a bracelet that someone has created that is a micro USB connected for Android and lightning connectors for the iPhone. And basically, you wear it on your wrist, and when you need to charge your device, you take it off and you charge it. It's really that simple.
So it's a, oh, okay. So it's an external battery.
Pretty much, but it looks like a bracelet, so you can always have it on you.
I see. Okay. Well, you know, as somebody who is constantly trying to charge my device, I don't hate this. I think, Well, yeah, I mean, what are the other options, right? You could do something like a Mophie case, which is, you know, sort of bulky that your iPhone could live in. Or you've got, I don't know, something that I guess you don't really have really much external battery charging devices that you could shove in a pocket because they all take up space.
Or you're kind of taking, I mean, what I've started doing is I'm constantly taking my plug with me, my charger with me everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. Like, I feel like such a dork. I'm like unraveling my charger, plugging it into the wall wherever I am.
Oh, yeah. I've become the person where I'll go up to the bar and be like, hi, I would like a beer. And can I charge my phone?
Yeah.
And usually they say yes, but you can tell that they don't really think I should be asking. But yeah, I don't know. I guess jewelry that serves a purpose. I can't say no to that. I mean, I don't think it's that cool of a bracelet, but I think it's a kind of fun talking point. If someone were to be like, oh, that's an interesting piece of jewelry you have on there, and you say, ah, but you know what it really is? It's a charging device. And I guess we're sort of used to those anyway because of the whole Fuel Band, Fitbit, personal activity bracelets that people are wearing. It's a little bit more acceptable.
Yeah, and I think what's nice about this, it comes in black, silver, and gold. So you have that option. It's water resistant. It comes in three different sizes. So I imagine they may have different versions of this that are more attractive as time goes on. And it's fairly affordable. The price is $79. You can pre-order it. It says it'll be $99 when available in stores. And I can't tell you how often I would use something like this. I mean, I would just wear it all the time. I don't care if it's good looking or not. I just I can't stand not having my phone charged. So I think it's pretty rad.
I think it's pretty rad, too. Wearable device chargers. That is the new rage. What else could they... I guess a bracelet would be a good one. You know, maybe a necklace of some kind, a ring.
Yeah.
A
ring would be neat.
Possibly a headband. Possibilities are endless. Yeah, that's where jewelry needs to go. You know, screw this. This does nothing for anybody.
Nothing.
This needs to be a wireless charger for my phone, or I'm not wearing it in the future. I'll wear it today.
Wow. That's quite a... You know what? I want to gift that, just that minute right there where you're like...
Oh, please do. Well, now you know how. Now you know how.
Now I know how. GiftYouTube.com.
All right. Before I say anything that is completely punchy that I will regret, we should wrap up this show. But that has been a fun Social Hour episode 176. Amber, it's nice to have you back in your home office, even though it looks different than it did the last time you were there. It's always nice when I know that you're safe and sound in Toronto.
it's nice to be here and be mixing things up. So if people haven't had a chance to watch the video version of the show, you should definitely check it out. You'll see a very bearded Scott Stratton, as well as my new little studio setup, which I probably will tweak every single week. But nonetheless, it's a whole different view of the Social Hour.
Absolutely. Reminder, we do record the show live on Thursdays, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Twit.tv/TSH is where you can keep up with all of the shows that you might have missed and all of our wonderful guests. And we will be back here in 1 week doing the exact same thing, same time, same place. Until then, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.
Goodbye, everybody.